Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show.
You've come to the right place for real estate advice. This is the Eric Stewart Show every Sunday morning. We bring you the truth in real estate. And Stuart Rosenthal from the Beacon newspaper joins me to discuss intergenerational housing, that trend. And we'll be chatting more about this over time on the show as we develop this feature. Today, we want to chat about that, plus avoiding getting a reverse mortgage and instead using a home equity line of credit and how to do that. Good morning, Stuart. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Eric. Nice to be here.
Sure. What do you have for us on intergenerational housing?
Well, we have a nice story about a woman in Silver Spring who actually has four generations living in her home. So that she's 65. She's got her husband and her daughter and son-in-law and their three young grandsons. And then occasionally her 91-year-old mother comes to visit. So they really have the experience of living in an intergenerational household.
Wow.
And they find there's so many good things that they like about it. First of all, for her mother, it's nice to be able to have the reassurance of knowing their caregiver is close at hand and that she will not be isolated. She'll be able to be involved in her great-grandchildren's lives and whatnot, mm-hmm. As is wonderful for the grandmother as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives the parents a really good helping hand in having, you know, mentors around and family members to help raise the children and extended family. That's a beautiful thing. The issues that they face, there are some challenges, of course, is, you know, privacy and boundaries and whatnot. You have to work these kinds of things out. So we have a little sidebar that sort of gives you ideas for ground rules you might want to set before you invite other family members to move in with you, you know.
Right.
Good to know.
Well, that's interesting. So what kind of a house is it? That does it have a first floor bedroom for grandma?
It's a 5-bedroom home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't actually remember. I wasn't there to do the stories. I don't know how the house is laid out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a big one, obviously, 5 bedrooms.
I met with a seller a few days ago, and they have a home in Potomac where they actually built a wing off of the house, first floor apartment.
Yes.
That's ground level that has, it's just a killer apartment for grandma.
Yeah.
With a, you know, cathedral ceiling and a super bath and
bedroom.
It would make a great man cave is what I was thinking.
But, that sounds good. Lennar, the home builder, actually has something called the Next Gen House. Which they've been doing since 2011, which has a separate suite with a separate exterior door with a bedroom, a bathroom, kitchenette, and a door into the main house that's lockable from both sides.
Huh. Where are they building that?
I don't know where they're building it, but apparently it's one of the things they have introduced and have available. Let's see, it says it's available in more than 300 communities in 14 states.
Well, I'm going to check on that and bring it to the show
because
that would be interesting for our audience.
Yeah, we have a reference in the story about that, yeah.
All right, so let's see. So we talked about intergenerational. What else do we want to chat about?
Well, we talked about the idea of a reverse mortgage or having some way of drawing on the equity in your home.
Right.
Now, we talked about reverse mortgages before. They're, you know, pros and cons, and they're not for everybody, but they have a very important place in many people's retirement planning. But here there's a story that's very interesting. It talks about taking a reverse mortgage as a line of credit and using it as a standby. In other words, if you don't draw on the line of credit, then not only is it there for you, but it grows. In fact, it grows at the interest rate which they would otherwise charge you if you were to borrow against it. So, for example, nowadays the interest rate's around 3.5% apparently on these things. So mm-hmm. if you didn't use it the first year and you had a $100,000 line of credit, it'd be worth $103,500 the next year. And it'll go up the next year and go up the next year. So the longer you live in the house and you don't use it, the larger the pile of money is that you have available to draw on down the road.
What you're saying is it's a reverse mortgage as a line of credit. I've never heard this term before. So you would start with a specific amount, and then it would grow over time by a percentage.
Right. See, when you're taking a reverse mortgage, of course, it's how old you are, how old the house is.
Right.
You know, those things just go into telling you how much you can draw of the equity. But you don't actually have to draw it. You can get the money in a lump sum if you want it, or you can get it in an annuity if you want it, but you can not take it at all and just hold it there as a line of credit. It doesn't cost you a dime while it's there as a line of credit. I mean, you had to pay the fees to get the reverse mortgage in the first place, but you can even fold those fees into the amount of the reverse mortgage. Now, that raises the interest rate, but that's actually a good thing if you're not planning to use it, because that means your money compounds at a higher rate.
Wow. Read about it in the Beacon newspaper, free publication. I'm going to pick up my free copy and read all about intergenerational living and how to use a reverse mortgage as a line of credit. News to me. Glad to hear about it. Thanks for bringing it to the show.
Thank you, Eric.
You know, each week I try to bring you information having to do with an excellent this title company called RGS Title. typically when we sell real estate, the buyers will pick the settlement company, and consistently RGS is picked, and the reviews are rave for RGS and Sage Title, the family of RGS Title altogether. I've invited one of the attorneys within RGS to join us. Her name is Helen Dankos. And Helen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Eric?
And good, thanks. Thanks for joining me this morning. I know it's early, but I do appreciate you calling in. We have an opportunity to discuss a situation that you faced as an attorney and how you resolved it. And I think the specific question that I asked Helen is, has she had someone sell their property, be under contract to sell the property, and then they have passed away before it goes to settlement? And what do you do in that situation? Helen.
Okay. I have definitely encountered this situation several times. And I'm going to back up a little bit on your topic and just talk about when you have a seller that's ill with the potential, you know, of imminent death. Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple of things that can happen. You can make sure that you find out if the seller has a power of attorney that can be used to get contract extensions while that person is sick. Unfortunately, as is too often the case, we have sellers that don't even have powers of attorney during that time frame. But then if the unfortunate situation happens that they do pass away, you're in a limbo situation, because until someone has the power to act on behalf of the seller, nothing can be done with the contract. And so you have to wait for probate to be opened. And depending on the jurisdiction, that can take some time. Often in my experience, the probate process maybe isn't a delay, but it's getting a copy of the death certificate. And so all parties are sort of in limbo while that's going on. I don't know, have you encountered that?
I had a case exactly that. It was actually a widow who died without any heirs. And I'm not exactly sure how this was handled. I think she did have a will to donate the value of the property to a nonprofit, but I think that the state had to set up somebody to represent her estate, and it wouldn't be a guardian at that point, right?
Correct. No, that would be a personal representative or an executor. But you're correct. If you don't have a will, it's extremely, I don't want to say dangerous, but it's more time-consuming because the decedent hasn't expressed their wishes as to who will be the personal representative.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, in those instances, someone has to come forward and petition the court to be appointed as a personal representative. So certainly when someone dies and there is a will, their wishes are expressed, and it can go quickly. I've known situations in some of the probate courts in Montgomery County and Anne Arundel in particular, where if you're very organized and you have the will and you have the death certificate, you can pretty quickly get appointed and get the process going. But if you're not, you're looking at several weeks delay. And it's very problematic. The one case I had, they were in the middle of a home inspection.
Mm.
And so the clock was ticking on on that particular contingency in the contract, and there was no one able to act.
Wow.
During that contingency period.
So I guess the buyer in that situation can submit a request list, but if they don't have the seller actually to submit the list to,
correct,
it sort of just goes into this void of time and has to wait until someone's appointed, and then the clock starts again.
Yes.
I got to tell you a quick story. I had a house. It was one of the first houses that I sold. The lady who owned it, you may have heard me tell this story, she got dementia, had no heirs whatsoever, and the state assigned her with a guardian. She sold her property, and I was actually the purchaser of this property in as-is condition with everything inside of it. I actually found out about the property, wanted to sell it as the real estate agent, but the attorney who'd been appointed, he asked if I'd want to buy it and gave it to me for, like, I think it was $90,000 is what I paid for it back in 1990, 1991. And it was full of stuff, including $110,000 in bonds. I found
wow.
The will. There was a car in the front yard. There was all kinds of antiques. There was a loaded gun in the drawer next to the bed. There were keys from I don't know what. She was a CIA analyst from the 50s. And, you know, what you just said about if you're not careful, somebody else can be assigned. Well, her will was for all kinds of things inside of her house to be given to neighbors and other people that she knew. But because we didn't discover the will in time, I sold a lot of that stuff. I gave a lot of that stuff away and then discovered the will. Now, I gave the bonds to the person who was then set up, because the will actually said where the funds were supposed to go from the sale of the property to the University of Minnesota. And although I had a right to the bonds because I bought the house as is with everything conveying, I didn't feel right keeping them, and I gave them back. But, you know, it's just you're in the choice. You have the opportunity to choose who is going to be the guardian or the executrix or executor for your property. So talk to Helen. You can call her today. What's the best number, Helen?
The best number to reach me at my office is 301-230-0070.
And call her Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. She's not there right now. That's 301-230-0070. Talk to Helen Dankus, and she'll help you out. Thanks, Helen.
Thanks so much, Eric. Have a great morning.
Thanks, you too. We'll be right back with more of The Eric Stewart Show in just a moment.